Do you want to start or do you want me to start? Is yours funny?
Hold on. I don't even remember what I wrote. What did I write?
Why'd I keep all this shit? Gavin books on sick day.
Yeah, it's...
All right, I mean, then you start.
Is it ever funny?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that you kind of got a point there. And this is Gaytriarchs.
So we had a good track record in terms of sickness this year. Really good track record. In fact, I definitely just fucked that over and jinxed it, didn't I? We're going to be out with pneumonia for the next few months. But anyway, yeah,
you're going to get scurvy in a week.
My kid was home from school for 2 days in a row because of fever. And it wasn't that big a deal, luckily, but it was questionable. I mean, it wasn't really a high fever. In fact, I verified with our principal. Do you know what is technically the temperature you're supposed to keep your kid home at?
Ours at daycare is 100.9.
You know, I was being reactionary. It was like 98.9. And we're like, oh God, it's a fever, which is dumb. It's like I've lost my spidey instincts, mm-hmm. right? So anyway, we kept him home at far too low a temperature. And he was fine, but it was definitely like, okay, if you're going to stay home, it's not going to be fun. And so anticipating that we were going to have a second day, I pulled out a whole bunch of shit that I've kept for like those sick days, being like, oh, here's some books from my childhood that you'll find really interesting. Here's some puzzles.
You're talking about like the Torah, like the original Torah. Got it.
Correct. Correct. And some puzzles and some like activities for a rainy day that I hold on to, but in particular shit that I held on to from my own childhood, mm-hmm. which I thought at one point was going to be oh, this will be so cool. The only time my kids will ever think that's cool is maybe when I'm dead and they find it and they go, oh, that's kind of cool. And they throw it away. I don't know if it's just my instincts. I'm not a hoarder, but I am nostalgic and I don't know. I'm nerdy and interested in history. And I thought that my kids would be remotely, No,
it's going to be the only time that'll, like you said, it'll be right after your funeral. They'll go home. You know, you serve food to all your friends. They all say, I'm so sorry for your loss. They all leave the house. And then you go through dad's old stuff. Then they will find it slightly interesting, but it's still going in the garbage. Yeah,
it's going in the garbage. But I mean, so I just was left there thinking, why did I keep all this shit? Like,
I feel like our generation feels the same way about our parents who were really into keeping furniture. Like furniture was something you would pass down to your kids. Like, oh, it's grandma's china cabinet. And I know all of us in my generation, not your generation, but all of us in our generation are very much like unattached to furniture. So they were so proud to hand down this thing that they thought was meaningful. Yeah. And then we look at them like they're pieces of shit. We throw it in the dumpster. And that's probably really hurtful, but it's true. Like culturally, like I don't give a shit about a curio cabinet.
Yeah.
But to them, it was super important.
And there are a lot of toys that I did keep. I mean, like I said, my mom kept everything. We've discussed that. Mm-hmm. And but a lot of my old toys, like
for those of you who didn't listen to that episode, we're talking about the tip of Gaben's penis. His mom kept his foreskin from his circumcision. Check whatever episode that was to go back to that.
Just Google it. I'm sure our SEO is spectacular right now. It'll be easy to find. So you know that the telephone that you pulled from the early 80s and the little eyes went back and forth. I had one of those originals. And now, you know, of course, Fisher-Price remakes the new ones. And I'm like, ha ha, I got you, corporate America. I have mine from 1983. And certain things like that worked when they were little toddlers. They didn't know the difference. So I do feel like I totally screwed over corporate, the toy industrial complex. But
you know what I miss about books of that time period is books back then, when you would smell them, they'd make you have to poop right away. Do you know what I mean? That smell of like raw wood book. Like books now, they're like plastic covered and whatever. Those old books, man, just one big whiff, you're in the toilet.
Excuse me, I'll be right back.
Speaking of toilet and garbage, not terrible transition. This has nothing to do with that. I get about 45 minutes of television a day. And that's from when my oldest goes to bed until where I'm ready to go to bed, around 9:15.
Right.
So we tend to watch like throwaway shows like Survivor and Amazing Race and American Idol and stuff that like, it's enjoyable enough, but I'm really just scrolling on my phone.
You're so disconnected from actual quality American TV right now.
Which is hilarious because I work in television. I create television and I just don't have time to watch it.
Right.
But what's so funny, what we noticed about this season of American Idol, if you're watching, is that there have been two different
first of all,
people.
Hold on. I didn't even know American Idol was still on. Just going to put that out there. Okay, please.
Yeah. They took continue. A big – well, because – so it was the original American Idol with like Paula and Randy and Simon. And then it went off the air for a while. And then it kind of came back in this new version. And the new version had Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and Luke Bryan as the hosts. And they are fucking amazing. Anyway, the show is the show. Whatever. But two people have come in. Two separate people who were adopted. And, you know, they always do those like – packages of their, you know, sad story or whatever.
Sure.
And both of these people came on. They were like, I have an amazing family. I love my adoptive family, but I've always been curious about where I'm from. And both times, American Idol surprised them with their birth parents or like their birth mom or whatever.
Oh, shit. Really?
And it was like this wonderful, glorious reunion of like, hey, oh my God, my And one time somebody goes, my real mom is here. And all I could think about were these poor people's moms who raised them hearing that.
Yeah.
Hearing the excitement of reuniting you.
Yeah.
And how fucking awful that must feel. These are not people who are having a bad life and who are missing a good life.
Yeah.
These are some people who have been raised in really great families. They love their families. They're cheering them on. But something about their birth family. And I don't listen, I'm not adopted. My husband's has siblings who are adopted. So there's a little bit of closeness there, but my kids are via surrogacy. I don't know how this feels, but it felt fucking awful to watch.
Yeah. That feels dirty. I mean,
and right?
Your show, but what I need to know is, did the adoptive family also get some airtime, or was it just about their real family?
No, the adoptive family were the ones who were there. Like, you know, they have people on the outside of the room waiting to see if they get their whatever. So they're there. They're in the B-roll. They're in the package. They're in all of that stuff. But they talk about like wanting to know my birth mom, which I get. Like, I get your like, where do I come from, whatever.
Yeah.
But the idea of saying my real mom.
Yikes.
And also the weirdness it must feel to be the adoptive parent. I don't know.
I mean,
maybe I'm overthinking this, but it was really weird to watch twice on American Idol.
I mean, talk about early 80s and needing to poop. This definitely reminds me of
a transition.
Like,
I can't wait.
Afternoon syndicated talk shows, that so much of that was about, you know, like makeovers and real families and birth parents. And I feel like that is definitely an element of my childhood that is, it's like television. What do I want to say? It's like trauma porn, but not trauma porn. It's like, I don't know, sensationalist porn that you just think, you can't turn away from it, but you really wish you would. So
is that a searchable term on Pornhub? Because I tend to go for very, very, very different, very different things. If you are adopted or come from an adoptive family or have adopted kids, I would be really curious to know, if you watch American Idol and saw this, what your reaction is. So please email us, gatejarkspodcast@gmail.com. We're really curious. I'm really curious. Gavin doesn't give a fuck.
But what I do give a fuck about is what's in the gay news today. Well, there's only one bit of gay news that I have to share here at America's Finest News Source, which is Beyonce covering Dolly.
Oh my God.
Now,
oh my God.
I know everybody listening to this already knows, but let's have a moment because that is fucking cool. And there's so much discussion, obviously, around Beyonce and her so-called country album. But as she says, it's not a country album, it's a Beyonce album. Mm-hmm. But how fucking cool. Two queens. I mean, unabashed queens.
The supernova that this gayness is creating is going to it's going to set the planetary orbits off in a totally different direction. There's so much gayness here. Yeah, and for better. But like, also what I love about it, beyond like two gay icons, two gay queens, two whatever, what I love about it is Beyonce is a little older, but like a newer artist throwing respect and love towards an older artist who is not in her genre. I fucking love that shit.
Yeah, Also, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome. And I mean, I wonder how many people have reached out to Dolly to be like, can we cover your music? And of course, there's Dolly covers all over the place. I mean, come on, Whitney Houston. And I'm sure a million others. And I'm just showing my lack of gay card where I'm like, I don't know how many other people have covered her stuff. Maybe Dolly's an open book and everybody covers her. But this is just, this is another level. It's badass. So frankly,
it's incredible.
Plain and simple. That's the gay news, is Beyonce and Dolly. So
amazing. That's good gay news.
I have What would you do?
Wait, for everyone who is curious, I found the 2021 London cast recording of this. I will play for you what it's supposed to sound like. Ready?
If I'm rushing by, what would you do?
Nice, but I'm still... I take your note and I discard it, and I'm just making "What would you do?" my own.
Yours is better.
Here's a scenario: you've got slightly older kids, let's say you know, between 10 and 12.
Okay,
you're having a little discussion, and one kid asks another kid, "Oh, do you do XYZ?" And the kid says, "No, that's gay." What would you do?
No, I need you to sing it before I answer that question.
What would you do?
now you're just switching up the intervals to piss me off. This is a really great "What would you do?" because you and I for sure grew up in this time period.
Hells
but
yes.
It's still. I have said this. I have said this a million times, and so I think what I would do is not treat it as this vicious, mean thing to the sayer, but I would correct it. I think I would go, do you mean that's stupid? Because, you know, gay and stupid are different. I would try to slightly separate the two. I don't think go into like, this is hurtful and gay. Like, I don't know if they want to hear that, right? It's all at that age, you want to be dangerous. You want to be edgy. I would just say, do you mean stupid or do you mean attracted to men? And
actually,
maybe embarrass them a little bit. And then I would leave it. Yeah.
This all okay. So obviously, I'm setting you up for something that actually happened to me recently, and I think it resolved itself quite well. But it also reminds me of the time that I was sitting in college orientation. So in 1971, and we had to watch a video that was essentially a DEI video. That hey, welcome to college. You're gonna be introduced to people of all different stripes, right? So I don't remember anything about the video, but obviously it was about diversity of all kinds, right? And including queer people. And afterwards, the video goes off, and the moderator says, "Okay, so what did everybody think of the video?" And the girl next to me goes, "I don't know. I mean, I thought it was kind of gay." And I was like,
oh, Jesus,
what did you just say? She was from California. I guess it was a thing, right? I did laugh at her, and like we joked about, I guess I called her out, and we laughed about it. But anyway, this happened to me recently, obviously. One of my kids asked a friend who was over, do you do a certain activity? And the kid said, nah, that's kind of gay. I was upstairs, but I heard it. And I was on that shit like stuff on shit. And I said, oh, sorry, what, did I just hear you say that you thought it was kind of gay? And did you mean that you think it's kind of stupid? Now, listen, even I sound passive aggressive in even retelling the story, but I think it was a great moment in me being like, whoa, do you mean kind of stupid? Just like you said, because I'm gay and I don't think I'm stupid. And, you know, we're a house that has gay people in it. So
I don't know if that's the parallel you want to make, but I hear what you're saying.
Right away, the kid was like, oh, yeah, sorry. And I moved on. But then I thought, what do I do about the parents? Because I do feel like, one, I wanted to address it, you know, and in a very nice way. I really like the parents. I was able to say, hey, just want to make you aware of something that happened here. And I gave just strictly the facts. This happened. I said this, just letting you know. And the parent was wonderfully mortified and also was quick to say that would not go in my household. And we do nothing but have love, especially for people who have chosen to pursue joy and their true selves in their lives. And she took it a step beyond what I was necessarily expecting it. And I don't fault the parents, but I'm glad we were able to have that text exchange. And, you know, we'll hope that the kid learns something.
Yeah, it. I don't think I would have reached out to the parents, but I don't think it's bad that you did. But I definitely think the little nudge you made to the kid is mm-hmm. so valuable, because I think about a lot of the shit I used to say. Listen, I grew up in the rural South.
Yes, you did.
In the 90s. I have said some horrific things. Uh-huh. And just the little nudges from the very few people who were willing to go on that line really meant a lot, because it did kind of go, oh, shit. Oh, like even if I didn't change, just to know – because I think some people are afraid to do that, but I think it's a really good thing you did,
yeah.
Which is surprising because, you know, you don't do a lot of good things. You know what is a really good thing we should do?
Tell me.
Our top three list.
Gatriarchs, top three list, 3, 2, 1.
Inspired by one of my favorite podcasts called A Typical Disgusting Display, we're doing the top three live events you have seen or witnessed.
Yeah.
So I'll start. Number three for me was a touring production of The Who's Tommy when I was 16 years old. My mom bought us tickets for my birthday, and I didn't know what the show was. And I had seen a couple of musicals at this point, like Cats and Fiddler and these kind of like old school shows. And then Tommy came through, and my jaw was agape the whole time, because I didn't know musicals could do that. I didn't know you could have a rock band on stage and mirror pieces flying through the air and like guitars. And like, it was just so exciting. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, this is cool. And that I credit that night to me spending my life, my professional life in the theater.
Totally.
So number three, The Who's Tommy, which is now just reopened, I think, last night on Broadway.
Yeah, sure did.
Number two, The Color Purple on Broadway.
Oh.
I, unfortunately, when The Color Purple came back to Broadway for, I think, the second time, which was what, maybe 5 years ago, I had never seen the movie. I had never read the book. I literally knew nothing about it except Oprah was in it and peed at one point. That's, I think, the majority of my knowledge of the show. Anyway, I walked in, and there's a song that the lead character sings towards the end of the show that when it was over, when I tell you that, like, I could feel every atom in my body moving. Like, it was so fucking incredible. That was also amazing cast and whatever, but it was just an absolutely incredible moment. That was number two. And number one for me, I was dating my now husband. I was living in Los Angeles, and John Williams, if you don't know, every year conducts the LA Philharmonic to some of his scores that he's written at the Hollywood Bowl. And he is my favorite film score, and he'll choose just a couple every year. He doesn't do all of them. And so I went, and he did my absolute favorite score and my favorite section of my favorite score ever. And it was, I've always loved music. I always loved symphonies and orchestration and all the weird kind of dorky music things. And he conducted my favorite piece of music of all time. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, is this real life? Am I experiencing the most incredible musical moment of my life? So, and that, by the way, was a section of E.T. called Adventure on Earth. But anyway, that was my number one. What about you?
That's awesome. Okay, I can parallel this a little bit, but I am proud to say I'm a little more superficial about the entire thing.
Nice.
On my list of top three live events I've experienced, number three was watching my kid perform as the lead in her very first fifth grade play.
Aww.
And when my partner and I got out of the car and walked into the show, my partner turns to me and goes, she better not embarrass us. Number two, summer after eighth grade, I got to see Depeche Mode perform at Red Rocks Amphitheater, which, if you don't know what Red Rocks Amphitheater is, it's like the most unbelievable live music concert in the world. And it was right by where I grew up. And being able to spend all day long, I don't think the tickets were reserved, so you had to wait in line all day long. And we were drinking Zimas in the afternoon on the stairs. And then seeing Depeche Mode that night, it was basically the first rock concert I'd ever been to, and it was unbelievable, and I'll never forget it. And then number one, I spent a summer on Nantucket when I was in college. I was just a poor kid teaching summer camp to little kids, and I was a barista at night at a coffee shop. It was badass. It was such a fun summer. And the Boston Pops come to Nantucket, and they play on the beach every summer. And I somehow got into a pipeline of people who were volunteering, like the kids, you know, the summer kids volunteering to serve wine to rich people at the Boston Pops. I think maybe it was a 4th of July concert. Anyway, So there I was serving wine to rich people, but then fully stealing wine. I would crouch down behind a table and chug a glass and then stand up and serve another and sit down and chug one. I didn't get rip shit, but, you know, just got happily drunk and then got to watch the Boston Pops play some big, you know, huge, maybe a 4th of July concert on the beach in Nantucket. And that was awesome.
Oh, what do we got next week?
Next week, I want to know about the top three things you give way too many fucks about.
So our guest this week is a ticker. He's a talker. He gained over 160,000 followers for his unvarnished and real approach to parenting, both helpful, but also very funny. He's a dad to two girls and married to a woman. So legally speaking, this interview may be the gayest thing he does today, but we'll see. Please welcome to the show, Owen Squires. Good morning.
Hello. Welcome. Good morning. Hopefully I can live up to all of that.
I know.
I mean,
especially the gay part. I mean, like, is this as gay as it's going to get today? We'll see, right? I mean, it's
today. We'll see how the weekend goes. I don't know.
You don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. So I found you on TikTok, like a lot of, I guess, our guests that we've had on the show, just in my FYP. Like, you just happened to pop up and you made me laugh and I kind of saved you into my leg. Like, let's email this guy. And then when I kind of did a deep dive into your TikToks are much more helpful than they are, than they were funny in my brain. Where that 80% of your stuff is like really helpful, good parenting advice. And then the 20% that I somehow got caught onto is fucking hilarious. So I was like, we have to have him on the show. He's funny and also he's helpful. So welcome to the show. That's why you're here. Also, you have really good hair. Really? For those of you who are just listening, Google him, find him, follow him. He's got great hair.
Yeah, and it's very consistent throughout all your videos, too. We won't put you on the spot about your hair until later. But per what David was just asking or talking about all of your content, I'm dying to know, who is your audience? Do you feel like you curate who they are?
And we will be right back.
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
That's a good question. There are analytics for that. And my audience is 95% female, most of which are millennial moms.
Oh, so they're like, hey, husband, you need to listen to this guy more. But it's not the dads you're directly speaking to, for better or worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the goal. Hopefully, you know, some of what I say will be shared with husbands and dads, etc. And I do have male followers too, you know, but a lot are moms.
I wonder if some of that is like the wish fulfillment on the part of the wives, where obviously you're very good looking, but also like, this is what I wish my husband would talk. This is how I wish my husband would talk about my kids or parenting or whatever. I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, a lot of what I talk about, what I say, what I admit is me just learning as I go. You know what I mean? I was not a great dad to begin with. I was not a great husband to begin with. And I'll be the first one to tell you that. And as I learn things and I have these epiphanies, I talk about them. You know, and I think that's one thing that keeps me relatable. Hey, this guy isn't like holier than thou telling you what to do and what not to do. It's like, hey, here's the mistake I made. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, and that's for sure why you're here and why I'm at all even interested in what you have to talk about, because you are like, here's the real part of me. And so I want to kind of dive into that a little bit. I'm curious, would you say like I was not a great dad? Would it unpack that a little bit for us, you know, in front of our millions of followers?
I think you have this idea of what parenting is going to be like, you know, just from your childhood growing up, seeing other parents do what they do, and you have this beautiful little bundle of joy and snot and puke and poop that you bring home from the hospital. And it's like, you have this idea that it's going to go a certain way. And I know that I put a lot of the child rearing responsibility on my wife early on, you know, and then it was like our second came along a year and a half later. And I remember thinking like, why is this so hard for you? You know, I don't find parenting as hard as you do.
Ooh.
You know, and then, yeah, that was how I felt. I spent a lot of time out in my shop doing woodworking, and like, I was an idiot, you know? And my wife at one point was like, you have to fucking help me more, you know? And she was like, you should be on TikTok. I think you would like it. And she was always sending me videos on parenting. And I kind of like dove in, and it was like these light bulbs were going off. I'm not doing any of this shit, you know? Yeah. And I really started to step it up and learn. And like, the more I got involved, the more I enjoyed it and the more I took on. And then I got an opportunity to be a stay-at-home dad through COVID, you know? And that, when I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and just to wrap up with that question, that was when I had my first viral video. It was when I was a stay-at-home dad, and I was talking about how what I'm currently doing is harder than any job I've ever had, hands down.
Yep.
You know? And it was like 1.5 million views in 2 days. Like, listen to this guy, you know?
Did you have mentors that out in TikTok world that you learned the most from or loved watching the most?
Oh God. Putting me on the spot. Probably. Right. I mean,
we're hard hitting here. We are the Barbara Walters of the gay podcasting community.
Spill the tea. Who do you love?
Yeah.
No, there are quite a few. I could give you a list of, you know, a handful of creators that I've followed since day one that are really, really good. And
yeah, no, I think it's really interesting because this is something I think about all the time, which is like when you do something and then you finally kind of bridge that knowledge gap, like you said, stay at home dad was like, oh, now I get kind of this thing, you kind of turn around and you go, how do I tell me before, AKA people who aren't parents yet or who are not stay-at-home dads yet, whatever, what this is like to where they can understand it without having to go through it. And sometimes it feels impossible. I feel that way about parenting. Like when I explain parenting to people, I'm like, this is all the same stuff I would have heard before, but I didn't really, really fucking get it, except for the 24/7 of it all. And so like, I wonder if that was part of you just being like, ah, I wish I could have told my former self, but would your former self have listened to you?
Right.
Legitimately.
Right. No other dudes are.
No.
It's all a bunch of wives who wish their husbands would act the way you do.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true, but like so many people have their wives say what your wife said to you, and they say, fuck you, and then they move on. They don't even try to change. And for you, you were like, oh shit, this is a learning lesson for me. And you change, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because you're doing it publicly too, right? Like you're failing publicly, which I think is awesome. Honestly, I think it's awesome. So
David, I'm going to call you out. Was there a question there?
No, I want to say that I enjoy watching Owen fail. That is why I brought him on here.
So does my wife. You guys have that in common.
I want to see you stumble and fall nonstop. No, but I really do mean that. I say this to like when I'm teaching in like theater or whatever. I always say like you have to fail forward. If you're not failing daily, you're not trying hard enough and you're for sure not growing. Yeah. But I didn't mean that to be a dick, but I'll be a dick if I want. This is my show. but so you kind of had this like realization. You're like, I'm a stay at home dad. What changed then? Like how did parenting change for you?
I was forced to own it. I was forced to own my mistakes. And it's like, you're either going to step up and do better or you're going to just flounder, you know? And, you know, it was a blessing. I don't want to say it was a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing. I got to spend so much uninterrupted time with my two little girls. You know, we formed that secure attachment. They really got to know dad and how fun he can be and how secure he makes us feel. And I learned kind of what makes the little brain tick, so to speak, you know, and it really like I really just kind of stepped into my role as a dad. You know, it forces you. Hey, here, catch this. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, my God. And my wife was the sole breadwinner at the time. So it was like she had to work and I had to watch the kids. There's this pandemic outside our front door. We handled it the way we did, the way we felt comfortable. And that was having our kids at home, you know. And I thank God every day that I got that year and a half to be with my kids. And it really built a solid foundation for me to move forward on as a dad. I try to keep in mind that a lot of the dads and husbands that my videos may reach haven't had the opportunity to be in the stay-at-home position. They're either the sole breadwinner or one of two. and they don't know what I'm speaking on, you know, like to them, it's just kind of like, oh, it's not that hard. You know, I'm the one that brings home the money. I'm never going to be in your position. I'll do what I can, but you know, it is what it is. And, you know, that was the way I grew up too, you know?
I feel like you bring some serious BDE to your videos.
Totally.
And you are in the face.
Look at Owen's face. Look at Owen's face. He has no
What's
idea.
BDE?
What
I don't know what that is.
Oh,
you
baby.
Bring some big dick energy to your videos. And there's many ways of being able to define that, but I would also define it, I think most importantly, that in a modern age, it means actually showing up with your manly self, but without the toxic masculinity, frankly. And in your videos, so you bring this BDE and it is in your face and you are kind of yelling at people. And I'm curious, the dudes who watch it, do you get under their skin and they yell back at you?
I've had very few men really go off on me, you know. Maybe a couple of stitches here and there from men that disagreed with what I was saying. You know, you'll get guys in the comments sometimes that'll leave really rude remarks about the way they feel. And then they get attacked by 3,000 women that are like, you're a moron, here's why. And I'm just like, I'm going to stay out of that one, you know. I didn't go into it planning to like have a bunch of female followers. That wasn't the goal. It was just kind of like, here's what I'm speaking on. This is what I'm feeling. And that's what happened, you know, but I'll notice like when I have a video that does really well, you know, it'll have 30,000 shares. So I'm like, I'm hoping that women are sending this to their husband and, you know, or the dad of the children. And he's hearing what I'm saying. And I know that the angrier I am and the ruder I sound, the less people are going to be open to what I'm saying. You know, like you have to be relatable. And it's like, I don't always want to have that energy, you know, like assertive, but also kind.
Yeah. But I think why you're so digestible, both for the women and for the men, is that the outside of you, and I don't mean the literal outside, I mean like your tone, your deep voice, the way your cadence when you talk is very could if put a different person in there and it could be like every high school bully I've ever had, toxic masculinity, but what's inside of it is what these women I think so badly want, but wrapped in a masculine kind of like dad vibe. Yeah, and so totally. I think that is both why it's digestible for the men to hear, but also so attractive to these women. Speaking of attraction, I had to go 40 videos deep before I saw you in a tank top. What gives? You're hiding a body. What gives?
I don't know. I guess I should do more tank top videos.
You absolutely should.
You ever feel like your followers are flagging, just throw on a tank. And
it's so true. Just be like, just was working out, had some ideas about being a dad, but like clearly you're holding the camera in a way where you're showing your midsection. I hate those videos, but also I bookmark them. But let me talk about the video that I hate the most. That really made me mad at you because it made me feel things I didn't like, which was when you talk about by the time your kids are 18, you'll have spent what 93% of the time you're ever going to spend with them already. How actually dare you? That's my question.
Yeah. That's a tough one to digest.
Right? Like that, like sometimes those little moments, I know somebody, we talked about maybe 100 episodes ago, but we talked about a similar thing where they say, how many times a year do you see your mom? Let's say 3 times, Christmas, whatever. How old are they? What's the life expectancy? So you're going to see your mom 18 more times ever. And then she dies. And you go, ah, fuck. Moving those levers of math can really highlight things. And when I watched your video about that 93% of the time, I was like gutted in a great way, right? I joke. Like I was gutted in a really positive way. And I told my husband, we usually get the kids up at 7. Like whether they're up or not, we walk up there at 7. And I was like, it was like 6:45. And I heard them up. I was like, I'm going to go see them. I'm going to go look at them. Yeah. Add to that 93%.
Yes.
It's a good reminder. For sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Having that data in front of you, it does help you get through those tough times of being a stay-at-home dad, for instance, and where you're like, wow, those days are long, but the years are short. And anyway, 93% at age 18, that's tough.
Right? Yeah. That's tough. We talked a little bit about on the pre-interview, which was so fascinating to me because this is something I think about all the time, which is the anti-child crowd and how they rub you the wrong way. Tell me a little bit about what you meant.
Yeah. For me, it's the aggressively anti-child crowd. Mm-hmm. Like you can be anti-child and not be a prick about it. in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, you could say, I don't want kids, or I don't even like kids, but without being a dick. You're right, yeah.
Yeah, the child-free crowd, I have some spicy opinions and thoughts on that.
Spill it.
I'll start by saying that I've never met an adult that is child-free and been like, why don't you want kids? What's wrong with you? Like, what do you mean? You know? But I know that goes on. So I know we hold a piece of the blame as parents for alienating other people for not having kids. I know that happens, which I didn't really before, you know? But with that said, I feel like there's this sort of subculture or movement of like people being aggressively child-free and picking on parents just for being parents, you know, like we're going to hate on kids. We're going to hate on parents and what you're doing and how you're doing it. You know,
you're ruining my time at the grocery store. You're ruining my time at the restaurant. Leave your kids at home.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard somebody say that you're entitled to a child-free life, not a child-free world. And I'm like, that makes sense to me, you know? Mm-hmm. But I hear a lot of it, like in my comment section on my videos, like they chime in like, oh, this blah, blah, blah. The favorite thing to say is, well, you chose to have kids. You have no right to be upset or complain this and that because you chose to have kids. And I'm like, well, you chose to be in a toxic marriage and you complain about that all the time. You know, you chose to go to fucking college and you complain about it every day, you know? Yeah.
You chose to get up in the morning and you complain about it all the time. Or in our case, David and I complain about parenting all the time. So we started a podcast.
So we made a podcast about it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It is our right. Yes, we chose it, and we are going to inflict our complaints upon you.
Yeah, because what it develops into is a culture of cool children suck. I hate them in my it becomes a part of their personality, which is so annoying. Listen. Kids are annoying. Mine annoy me every day. When I go to the park or I go to the grocery store, I go to other people's kids. We've talked about this all the time. Other people's kids annoy me too. But like you said, not in a way where I'm like, they shouldn't exist or be allowed around me. This can go into a broader conversation about all kinds of parts of the world and politics and nationalism, where it's like anything that goes beyond what I personally want shouldn't exist for everyone else, to protect my sense of the way the world should work or whatever. And that is so fucking stupid. I fucking hate it. You can want to have kids and also be annoyed by them sometimes. Mm-hmm. You should. Yeah, if you're not annoyed by your kids sometime, you're not allowed on this show.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And
you hit the nail right on the head there, David. There's just so much I want to say.
Say it.
I've never met like someone that's passionately child-free and is like, it's really cool that you have kids. You know, it's awesome that you started a family. Like, I really like kids. You know, I enjoy their being around them. It's just not for me. You know, I don't have the emotional bandwidth to be a parent, but I think it's awesome that you are. What's your kid's name? Like, I've never had that interaction with a child-free person.
Right.
It's always like nasty and, you know, there's always friction, you know, and I try to keep in mind what you just said, David. Like, I remember me in my 20s. You know, I found children a lot more annoying than I do now, you know, and anytime there was a kid like acting up at the grocery store or the movie theater, my first thought was like, that's a shitty parent. You know what I mean? How dare you not keep this little kid under control? And then you become a parent and it's like, this is the way that children are hardwired. They are fucking batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you have one that's calm and is a rule follower and kind, that's an anomaly. Consider yourself very lucky. Most children are not like that, you know, and it doesn't make you a bad parent. And if you scold them to the point where they're like introverted and submissive and they go into fight or flight every time you raise your voice, that's not healthy. That's childhood trauma in the making. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be patient. You have to work through the tantrums and be emotionally regulated before you approach a situation. 20-year-old me wouldn't have fucking understood any of that shit, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's part of like, it's stuff you're never going to understand until you're a parent. And that's why the aggressively child-free crowd is fucking annoying to me.
Yes, but I think, that's what we were talking about. Like, how can we bridge that gap of like, it wasn't until I parent or whatever. I will say that like, I have some some of my closest friends don't want kids, haven't had kids, don't want to have kids, but they aren't dicks about it. They are just like, I didn't want kids, so I don't have them. What I think is the what is it? Stuck in your craw, crook in your craw? What is this old fashioned saying?
Something stuck in your craw.
Yeah, whatever is stuck in their craw. What I think it is what exactly what you said, which is I think some of the child-free people think that we look down on them or for not having kids, or we think that we are better for having
all
kids.
All about insecurities.
Which every parent totally disagrees. Every parent says, if you don't want kids, do not have them. We are on your side. And they don't, I think they feel like they're being judged a little bit, like our lives are better. Guys, our lives are way worse. You made the right call. We are not judging you at all. Don't judge us.
Owen, you've got opinions. Does your advice giving ever bleed into public?
No, never. I've never like given unsolicited advice or asserted my opinion where it wasn't. No, not at all. I mean, I think I'm kind of maybe a little introverted in public, you know, when there's people that I don't know, especially other parents, like I'm quick to smile and give a compliment and say hello, that kind of stuff. But no, not advice. I wouldn't, not my style.
So one of the things you talk about a lot on your account, which I really like, and I want to talk just a little bit about, is your kind of idea of non-abusive parenting or gentle parenting and kind of what your point of view on that is.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. It's hard because, you know, I'm an elder millennial. I'll be 40 this summer. And I was raised a certain way, you know, spankings, hands-on discipline, punishment, corporal punishment, whatever, however you choose to describe it, was a big part of me and my brother's childhood. And it was the way I started out. You know, I remember when my daughter was three and a half, four years old. This is my oldest daughter. I was giving spankings, you know, I was yelling, I was giving spankings, not all the time, you know, but when I felt like it was warranted, that was the way I handled it, you know. And then I started digesting TikTok and gentle parenting or non-abusive parenting. And I talk about it in one of my videos where I'm in the living room. My daughter's three at the time. She was doing something that I didn't like. And I stood up and I was like, Amelia. And she was like, oh my God, you know what, Daddy? And she like dropped everything she was doing and cowered. And I just left the situation. I fucking went in my room and I started crying. You know, I was crying. Cause I was so frustrated, like with not knowing how to parent properly, inflicting the same trauma that I had gone through as a kid. You know what I mean? And I have daughters. I don't have little boys. I have daughters. So in my opinion, it's like even worse to be this scary force in their life. So anyway, I kind of picked up on the gentle parenting thing, and I'm not an expert. You know, I try not to give too much advice, but I'm sharing what I'm learning. You know, this is what's working for me. This is what I've experienced. These are the mistakes I've made. And something I'm working on now is not yelling so much, you know, like yelling and screaming in a child's face is a form of emotional abuse.
Sure.
You know,
for sure.
And I do that a lot more than I should have. And if I'm honest and I look back on my childhood, you know, my dad would take my brother and I and like smack our heads together like a couple of bowling balls, knock it off, boom, and smash our heads together.
Wow.
And it would hurt and we would cry, you know, and stuff like that. But what I remember the most is all the yelling and the way that it made me feel about who I was, you know, and the harsh criticism. Don't do that. Why are you doing it this way? We don't do that. And it felt like our teachers were yelling at us. Everybody was always yelling. Mm-hmm. And it was like none of the adults were emotionally regulated, but they expected all of us kids to be.
Yeah.
Oh, times. Yeah. That's you know? A good point. Yeah.
And I still yell more than I should. You know, yeah. I admit that right now. And I'm that's currently what I'm trying to work on. Mm-hmm. If I'm frustrated and I feel like I need to yell, I should probably take a deep breath and stand back, let my wife handle it in the moment.
Yeah. Only good parents think they're bad parents. And just the fact that you're even telling the story to me means you're a good parent. And what I like about how you talk about gentle parenting, as you call it, non-abusive parenting, where I think we often make fun of gentle parenting on the show, because when we're talking about gentle parenting, we're talking about like, honey, but you know, like the comedically soft, snowflakey. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying, which is totally true, which is like, I'm going to improve my child's life over my own by, you know, 70%. And I'm going to take away physical abuse. I'm going to try to take away as much yelling as I can. And we know we're never going to be perfect, but just the act of it is so great. And I do the same thing. I find myself thinking, why did I fucking scream at him? He just wanted another piece of cake. Why? Like, and just that introspection is so much better than a lot of us are raised. And so I so commend you for the way you're kind of just trying shit out in public, because I really do think it's helpful. And usually my job on the show is to tell dick jokes and be funny, and Gavin's is the one to talk about serious things.
And gratitude.
But I really do. You're on the show because I think your stuff is really funny, but also really, really relatable and helpful to just get better. You're not going to be perfect, especially Gavin. He's awful. But like, just to get a little bit better as parents.
Making the world a better place, like I like to say. Now, I need some advice in terms of yelling, which is, I think I've actually developed a fairly good sense of not raising my voice, despite the fact that I'm an animated loudmouth. But I'm being accused of yelling at my kids when I'm speaking in a pointed manner. And they're like, you're yelling at me. And I'm like, no, I'm literally not yelling. I am literally not yelling right now. And I'm like, wow, apparently I pack a lot of punch in my my aggressive whispering. And so I don't think that that fits in the parameters. But if you have advice on aggressive whispering, please add it to your list, okay? Because I will listen to that shit and I will share it with my 7 followers on TikTok.
The tone and the cadence. Yeah. Listen, I'm not a perfect parent. I yell. I get aggressive. There's going to be stuff my kids, when they get older, go, Dad, why did you do it this way? Why did you do it that way? Well, you know, I guarantee
have to give
I'm
them
creating
content for therapy. Come on.
Yes. No. I know there's going to be trauma in some form, you know. But what I can say, Gavin, is that my oldest, she's going to be 6 this summer, right? She's very strong-willed. She's a lot like her dad. Although I'm extremely sensitive, I'm strong-willed. She likes to make her own rules. She has a hard time. She says no. She talks back. And I want to yell. I want to yell. To me, it's like I'm hardwired for that being the answer. Listen to me. I am in charge, you know? And what I'm learning is that she is very, like, reward-focused. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have some kind of a reward or a goal that she can work towards for her good behavior, if I can point out what she's doing right a lot more than when I point out when she's doing wrong, she thrives on that. You know, if I can try to be her coach instead of her critic, I feel like her childhood has a much better chance of not having the kind of trauma that mine did, you know? And that's just the goal. That's not how I do it every day. This is just the record that plays in my mind. You know what I mean?
For sure. I it's funny you say that. And I go, I was saying to my husband the other night, I came downstairs from a rough bedtime. And I said, I think my kryptonite as a parent is the disobedience. And as soon as I said that, I went, disobedience? It's not your fucking dog. And I remember thinking as a kid, when my parents would demand obedience from me and I couldn't question anything, I would get so frustrated that I couldn't have my pitch my idea or whatever. And it was just one of those weird connecting points. It was like, that part of me really frustrates me in parenting when I say brush your teeth and they say no. I want to push them over. Mm-hmm. But then I go, wait a minute. Fuck your. So having those conversations in your head of like, okay, is not brushing his teeth immediately the worst thing that's ever happened in the world?
Right.
But it feels that way. My blood starts to boil and I'm like, how dare you? Like, I'm your dad. You're 4. Right. But I'm like, I'm your dad. You're 4. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well said. Very well said.
So we like to end every interview with the same 2 questions, which is, what is your favorite part of parenting? And what is your least favorite part of parenting?
Ooh, my favorite part of parenting. I would say that my favorite part of parenting is knowing that I have these tiny souls that have no control over the family that they're born into, who their parents are, what their life circumstances are going to look like. They're completely vulnerable to the way you treat them, right? And the gift that I have is that same thing. Like, I get to choose to be a safe space for my children. I get to choose to teach them things. It's hard to articulate, but there's this feeling I have where it's like these two little girls are completely vulnerable. They have no choice or say in the matter at this young age, and I get to be this safe space for them, to teach them things and to offer them endless amounts of love. You're special. I love you. I'm lucky to have you in my life. Your friends are lucky to have you. Like, you're doing a really good job, baby girl. I want you to hear that, you know? And not all parents are like that, you know? And I was lucky enough to learn early on that these are some of the most important things. That's my favorite part of parenting. Mm-hmm. My least favorite part of parenting is just the struggle, you know, the ignorance, the learning things the hard way. You're going to stumble four times before you finally do it right on the fifth time. And the constant second guessing yourself. You, as a parent, you always feel like you're doing it wrong. That's mm-hmm. one thing that I've learned. You mm-hmm. always feel like you're doing it wrong and you're making a mistake, and you second guess yourself. And I feel like that's why it's so important to have a community. Other mm-hmm. parents that are failing alongside you, that you can bounce things off of, that you can, you know, relate to through stories and experiences. But I think you guys would agree, parenting is probably the hardest thing that anybody will do in their lifetime.
Well, you are probably the straightest person we've ever had on this show, but you are part of the Gaytriarchs community, because there is nothing more important, I think, than us creating this sense of, we all suck at this. Let's all mm-hmm. commiserate, get up the next day and do the best we possibly can, because we love our kids.
Very well said.
Thank you for being a Gaytriarch. You can be our ambassador.
You're officially a Gaytriarch. We'll send you your patch in the mail. For those of you who don't follow Owen, please, he is on TikTok. He's on Instagram. Owen Squires, thank you so much for coming by and demeaning yourself by being on our stupid little podcast.
Thanks, Owen.
You're welcome, guys.
So my something great this week is being United Premier Silver status.
That's the most mature thing you have ever said.
I have fully drank the Kool-Aid on the entire like status on airlines thing. So I live near Newark Airport, and so that United is their hub. So I almost always fly United. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to double down. I'm going to always fly United. I'm going to try to get that status, because what happened was a couple years ago, I got status because my husband had a thing or whatever, and it was so amazing. We're not talking about going first class. I can't afford that. I'm way too poor. But just getting preferential, like boarding, getting free upgrades, like all of the free bags, like priority bags. So bags will come out before any other bags. That kind of shit I thrive on. This is why, never let me get rich, because I will ignore all you poor fucks. You guys are dead to me at that point. But this, I just got Premier Silver status because I flew a lot last year and I'll be flying a lot this year. And oh, does it feel good?
My something great was last night I took my daughter and some friends to the mall.
And now, this is great?
I don't live near a mall, so it was a schlep. But I knew that I was going to get so many points for doing so. And I just let them loose, as 12-year-olds do. They just ran around the mall themselves. And I was like, please don't get kicked out. Please don't get kicked out. I went and had a $6 happy hour martini at some lowbrow Italian restaurant there, but above the Olive Garden, they might add. And anyway, they got in the car. They had a thrilling night, really just like walking around. I mean, they did spend some money, but, and then we drove back and I let them all DJ on Spotify, and they played the most rip roaring rap that I've heard in a while. I didn't know any of it. I didn't know my daughter knew all the words to it. And I chose not to get, you know, huffy or fatherly about it. And I just let them rip those fucks and shits and all the body parts. And consequently, when they got out of the car, they said, I overheard two of them say, your dad is the coolest.
Oh, score.
Yeah. She was like, eh.
Yeah, but when preteens or teens think you're cool, you have fucking won.
I agree. It felt pretty great, even though my ears needed to be washed out. But Nevertheless, that's our show. If you have any comments, suggestions, or general compliments, you can email us at gatriarchspodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can DM us on Instagram. We are at Gatriarchs Podcast. On the internet, David is at David FM Vaughn everywhere, and Gavin is at Gavin Lodge on nothing.
Please leave us a glowing 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, and we'll drink to that next time on another episode of Gatriarchs.